Hello and welcome to The Dorothy Project, the interview podcast profiling women who live in a gay man's world. Today I'm talking to the drag queen Fanny Minka. Fanny is unusual among drag queens for a few reasons. She's a cisgender woman, she started doing drag with her husband, and she is the world's only travel blogging drag queen. So you can see why I wanted to speak to her. Fanny has some really interesting perspectives on the performance of gender, on how the queer scene has changed and continues to change, and whether the concept of a Dorothy could even become obsolete. So let me get this straight. You are the world's only drag queen travel blogger.
Yes. Apparently, according to Google, I can't come up with anyone else on this.
We'll go with that. That's a good authority. So how did you get into that?
In which specific side?
The blogging.
So I worked in the film industry for about 13 years. And then whilst I was doing that, about the time I hit my early 30s, I was like, right, okay, I definitely don't want to have children, so what do I want to do? And I was like, I want to go see the world. You know, I don't think I've done anywhere near enough travel. And so I decided to start doing lots of like solo travel and just going on little trips by myself. And while I was doing that, I was making lots of maps about where I'd been and taking people's tips and putting them onto little maps and being like, okay, cool. You know, this is where I'd like to go and stuff. And then I was like, oh, I should put all these maps onto a website. And then when I did that, I was like, oh, maybe I should write something to go with it. And then it just all spiraled from there. And so I ended up deciding to leave the film industry and do a big career change and move into doing like editorial travel stuff. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I ended up doing that.
Amazing. Yeah. Do you do any actual like traveling in drag?
I went to Barcelona Pride last year. So I spent most of that time in drag, you know, and that was fantastic. And sometimes I do, but I think this year I'm doing a lot of UK travel because it's 15 years actually yesterday since I left Australia. So as part of that I was like, right, I have seen so little of this country while I've been here, so I'm actually going to do lots of travel over the next couple of months doing that, and I'm hoping to incorporate some drag shows as part of that. So you know, where I'm going, do a show, but also go and see where I am and stuff. So yeah.
Did you see you know, Miss Cracker, did you see her Instagram when she was touring?
No.
So she, everywhere she went, she would do like a mini photo shoot in drag during the day. And I was just like, oh my God, how are you not exhausted?
Also,
like, you're doing drag day and night.
And
like,
who is carrying your bags around?
This is
the biggest thing I'm concerned about, because like drag takes a lot of like, a lot of makeup, a lot of wigs, you know, usually the outfits are very tiny, but like the rest of it, well, mine are anyway, but the rest of it, it's quite a lot of luggage to carry around. So then you're carrying that and you're trying to be this freewheeling traveler, you know, it kind of doesn't go that well together. So I need to get to the point where I've got someone else to carry my bags, I think. Yeah.
And the amount of time as well,
yes.
If you're getting in and out of like drag,
yes.
Then yeah. And what kind of drag do you do? Are you more of a dancer, a lip syncer, a looks queen?
I'm probably not a looks queen, but I definitely do loads of dancing, and that's mainly because I've been involved with Sync the Pink for coming up 6 years, I think, this year will be. And then I've also do lip sync shows as well. So I kind of do a bit of both. I kind of love doing both as well. Like there's something about just dancing all night on a stage, you know, it's just makes me very happy, you know, but also a lot of the time my brain, every time I'm listening to music, my brain's like clicking into mode and going, ooh, how can I do a show to this? How can I do a show to that? You know?
Because Sync the Pink, like one of the things that I always think of first is those huge musical numbers.
Yes.
Like I think there's so much amazing drag in London, but I think one of the things that Sync the Pink do uniquely almost is just the sheer number.
Yes.
Like the first time I went to one of the balls, I was like, oh my God, there's like 20 drag queens
on
that stage in this one number.
Yeah.
So like, how are they put together?
There's a team behind it who, you know, are choreographers and big dreamers and fabulous minds who put it all together. And so, yeah, it'll start with, you know, rehearsals a couple of weeks in advance, and it's always really exciting to know what campy number they've come up with next and what the concept is, because we usually end up just laughing so much about it the whole way through. And then, you know, the choreography as well is super campy, and it's just a lot of fun to do. So yeah.
And how did you get involved?
So my ex is also a drag queen, and he also pole dances. And so when it was on originally at the Bethnal Green Working Men's Club for years, they had a pole there. And so he approached them and was like, look, hello, I love your night. I am a drag queen, but I also am a pole dancer. Would it be okay if I came along and like did a bit of pole dancing? And they were like, of course, yes, get involved. And so he started hanging out with them. And so naturally I started hanging out there a lot. And then they just completely embraced me, completely embraced us as a couple. It was very lovely, you know. Mm. So yeah.
So when was the first time you did drag? Tell me about
that. First time I did drag was for a night called Kinky Salon, where they were doing a party that was kind of like come as your favorite art inspiration or something like that. And I love the work of Miss Van, who's like a Barcelona graffiti artist who does all these really voluptuous women with big fierce faces and stuff. And I was like, oh, I just want to paint myself up like her. And so I said to Robin, my ex, I was like, you know, teach me how to do drag, because like I basically want to be this over the top woman tonight. And that was probably about 7-8 years ago, maybe, something like that. I can't remember now. But so yeah, so it was very much that hyper femininity, that hyper performance of gender, you know, this really over the top and idea of what I was doing. And then that kind of planted the seed a little bit, you know, so.
And was it interesting, because there can't be many like male female couples that are both interested in drag. And I always think it's really interesting, like coming at makeup in particular, yes, from those two such different angles.
I know. I'd always laugh because it would take Robin so much longer to get to that base level where he'd have to block out so much stuff, whereas I'd be like, a lot of concealer, you know, just, you know, to get us both to a blank canvas where we could then paint on top of that. It would take him a little bit longer, of course, because he had a lot more to cover up, you know.
Yeah, and the different things that, you know, having done like girl makeup.
Yes.
Versus like, and then some of those aren't even useful in drag makeup.
Yes, no,
like they can be
not
a bit of a red herring.
Yeah,
it's really
exactly
interesting.
But I was never very good at doing natural looking makeup, so it actually suits me very well to do like over the top makeup, because you know I'm a bit heavy handed with it, you know.
What made you realize, so you went to like one party, but like lots of people go to one party, yeah, and dress up. What made you think, I might want to do this again, I might want to perform, I might want a whole persona?
I think it's just very much that I was lucky to be kind of part of that world, you know? And so it wasn't like I was standing on the outside going, hello, I want to do this, knock, knock, let me in, I think you should give me a stage. It was more that I was being given a stage and I was surrounded by all of this, but also that, like, my love of drag stretches way, way, way back to when I was a teenager, you know? I've always been obsessed with it. I was 13 when Priscilla Queen of the Desert came out. It was the first album I ever owned on CD that I went and bought for myself. The first bar I ever snuck into was a drag bar in Sydney, you know, underage. So, and I started dressing as a drag king probably when I was about 19 or so. So I started just, you know, doing a lot of that kind of stuff from a really early age. And I'd done lots of performance before, so it all just felt like a very natural fit. But it was actually, to be honest, like, I very much, it was probably something that I'd probably wanted, would have happily done if it'd been seen as okay a long time ago. But it wasn't a fight that I necessarily wanted to fight myself. And so I kind of took a back seat and waited for a lot of other really amazing progressive women and non-binary performers to be like, give me a fucking stage, I'm allowed to do this as well, you know. And so I kind of rode on the coattails of them a little bit. So once they kind of cleared space and made space and fought for space, then I was very much like, okay, cool. So yeah, I can do drag. That's okay now. Okay, fine. Yay. Other female and non-binary performers have had to. And that is very much kind of challenging this notion that, you know, performing, doing a hyper-gendered performance has to be done by the opposite gender, you know, so that, and that it's specifically ensconced in a gay male world, you know, and that it's quite interesting because I remember when I was very, I've always been very heavily involved in activism, and when I was, what was it, late 90s, early noughties, when I kind of started getting into student politics and stuff like that, there was a lot of arguments against drag, you know, and they were like, it's super misogynistic, it's absolutely, you know, it's taking the traits and of what's this idea of what women should be, and then performing it in this big way, and, you know, using a lot of really crude ideas of women and taking the piss out of everything to do with vaginas, to menstruation, to boobs, to everything, and just kind of doing it in a way that really was really demoralizing. And so there were so many arguments against it then. And then to turn around and hear these days that's just like, oh my God, how dare you take this away from us, you know, I don't know how it's taking it away from anyone, but how dare you kind of co-opt gay male culture, you know, it was suddenly like, I'm hearing the same arguments almost again. It's just like, how can you co-opt what this concept of what it is to be a woman? And then it's just kind of seems a self-reflective battle, just kind of like, you know, there's no winner in there. Unless we do drag and we do it in a positive way and we don't, you know, take on misogynistic tropes, but do it in a beautiful, wonderful, positive, colourful way, then it's okay for everyone, you know?
It's so interesting, I think, what threatens people.
Yeah.
Because I think when people are threatened, sometimes they don't even realise how aggressively they're reacting. And yeah. You're like, it's so interesting. Okay, there's a button being pushed here. And why is that so sensitive? Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting, like, you know, there is drag that's misogynistic, mm-hmm. but that's bad drag. That's like, that's not the art form, like, as exactly. a whole. Do you think, though, because I'm really interested, so I've dragged up, like, a couple of times.
Okay.
And so the
club... Do you have a drag name?
I don't. It's kind of in progress.
That's
like,
okay.
Nothing has stuck yet.
Yeah.
And the first time I did it, it was really interesting because I just assumed... I will be seen as a drag queen. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, it was so interesting in terms of like the physical presence, mm-hmm. because I was like, okay, I'm literally at least a foot shorter mm-hmm. than all the male drag queens.
Yes.
When I walk into a space, you don't necessarily instantly mm-hmm. have that presence. Like,
yeah.
do you think there are differences, the points you can make with drag as a man versus as a woman, or do you think it's different facets of the same art?
I think it's the same, because it's just like, for me, there's also, as I mentioned beforehand, there's a lot of performers who don't even identify as either gender who do it. So for them, it's, I think, and this is very much a part of the world that I belong to in the drag world, is that there is that complete scale and diversity, you know, so my perspective on it is all very much about that. So it's just that I see everyone doing everything, and that's all good. Do you know what I mean? So and I personally see it as a wonderful platform for expressing this and commenting on what this concept of what it is to be a woman. So I've done lip sync shows that have looked at violence against women, female desire, you know, stuff like that, like exploring these notions. And I find that really interesting because it's a wonderful platform for me. But then also I just love having campy fun as well, you know. So there is things that I can look at and comment on because that's my experience. But then there's also room for people to do that no matter what their gender, you know.
You mentioned that you've performed as a drag king as well.
Well, I haven't performed as a drag king, but I used to, I've dressed, yeah. I did, I used to cross-dress a lot when I was in my, like, late teens, early 20s, yeah.
And how did that feel different?
I don't know if it felt very much different at all. And it's interesting because the way that the masculinity that I was trying to embody was very much not a lot of what I see a lot of drag kings doing now. It was more like I was probably trying to be a gay man. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like a very campy kind of like notion of masculinity. Do you know what I mean? So it probably wasn't that different from dressing as a drag queen either, you know? So... yeah, which is possibly why I kind of haven't done too much being a drag king now, because I don't necessarily want to dress up in this notion of hyper-masculinity that I don't identify as something that I like.
There's much denim, there's so much
leather,
like there's
which
so
is
much
all great.
Like it's amazing. Yeah, it's just so different.
Yeah, and it's just not something that I identify with. So I was like, maybe I need to bring back some really like campy drag kingness, you know.
I'd
that would
love
be fun.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, so many female Tina Fey characters are trans gay men that don't know it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, that's this like niche that I just really get.
Yeah.
And you hardly ever
yeah.
see.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is it. There is so much more that can be explored in drag, you know, so much more. And I think too often we watch shows like RuPaul's Drag Race and we go, okay, this is how it's meant to be done. This is the limited sphere in which it can be done, you know. And yeah, there's so much more happening already outside of that. And there's so much more that can still happen, you know, so.
And I think it's really interesting, and this is something that I'd love to do like a kind of discussion about, because I think there is now a whole audience that is discovering drag as an art form through their TVs and through RuPaul's Drag Race specifically. Yeah. And it is this, like, it's obviously, it's a great kind of window, but it's really narrow. And I can't wait to see the UK version, just because, like, Michelle Visage in particular has such narrow, like, why aren't you cinching?
Where is your
makeup? Where is the glamour? And I think about the London scene in particular, the East London scene, and I'm like, half the people have beards. How is she going to handle that?
You know,
I can't wait.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the hog bodies all around, you know?
So, like, really hairy hog bodies just like some nipple covers.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and there is such beauty and such a wonder to all of that. And it's just like, this is something that's been really interesting throughout the time that I've been involved in Sync the Pink, because you've noticed that the queens that have started incoming, particularly younger queens, are all like tongue popping, like catchphrase, you know, bleating kind of queens who do this look that is very much very polished and very Instagram ready, which is very different if you look at the, you know, the old, oh, they'd hate me to say the old guard, but like Johnny Boo and John Sizzle and, you know, Amanda Pet, you know, theirs is like all performance, you know, and they're amazing performers because they're not spending hours trying to think about all of that stuff. They're putting together a great concept, a great show, you know, they're natural entertainers. So, you know, yeah, it's interesting to see the difference, you know.
And that's what I love about it as an art form, actually, is that you can come to it from such different places. So you can come to it being like, I am very visual, I am an artist, I'm an Instagrammer.
Yeah, the thing that I find interesting on RuPaul's Drag Race is because they're trying to be like, oh, you need to be able to do this and this and this and this and this. And they have come people coming through who are like, oh, I don't actually know how to do this and this and this. And that's actually okay. Like, you can find your little spot and be like, this is who I am, you know. There's some performers I know who paint amazing faces, never would tuck ever, do not call themselves a drag queen, but will perform night after night after night, you know, and so there's a whole spectrum out there, you know.
So one of the things I'm asking a lot of people I speak to is about the first time they went to a gay bar or a queer space, and it was really interesting. That was like the first time you ever went to a bar.
I think I tried to sneak into a bar in my hometown before that and then been thrown out because I was, you know, quite clear. I was a very tiny little thing, so I was quite clearly underage. And also I lived in a small town. So like the moment I tried to get in, like everyone was like, we all know you. You are not 18 yet. Get out. So when I went to Sydney, I like just walked straight in without anyone checking into a drag bar, and there were drag queens, and it was this, I can't remember the name of it now, it used to be, I don't think it's open in Sydney anymore, but it used to have this beautiful big oval shaped bar with a really wide top on it, and then the queens would perform around the top of that. It was amazing. And I was just like, oh my god, what is this? This is amazing. This is where I'm meant to be, you know. Hello, I'm home, like, you know. So yeah, that was the first time I remember. And I think it was probably only 6 to 8 months later that I moved to Sydney and then was very much solidly hanging out in the gay scene after that. So yeah, I realised that I was queer very much as soon as I hit my teens. So I think that had a lot to do, you know, and then kind of came out when I was at high school and then didn't have a very good experience with that. So that all informed, I think, a lot of me just being like, yeah, this is not for me, you know. But actually, surprisingly, I only have one friend from high school still, and he was 2 years above me, and there was, like, so many gay men in that year. I don't know how, and I ended up being friends with all of them, of course. And he lives in London now as well, you know, so it's actually quite nice that we're both always like, oh, my God, we escaped. It's so good.
So one of the reasons I called this the Dorothy Project was because I feel like there just aren't any nice terms to describe women who hang out with a lot of gay men.
Yeah.
Like, fag hag, I think, is horrible for everyone.
I think that's because it's been always used as a negative term. It's never been a positive term. I don't know if you ever saw Penny Arcade's show that she came through, what's it called, Bitch, Dyke, Faggot, Whore? It came through London about, I mean, I think she's been performing it since the 90s, but, and It came through London about 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And I saw it at the, where was it? Down the Vaults Theatre. And anyway, she talks a lot in it. So she, I think she was basically adopted by a pair of gay men when she was in her teens or something like that, and like went to Fire Island loads like all of her life. She's like in her 60s now. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so she talked about reclaiming the word fag hag. And she was just like, and made all these really interesting and funny jokes about it all. And she was just like, we all like to be, it's kind of like we want to be special. She's like, how do you get 10 fag hags in a room? You have to have 100,000 gay men, you know, because we don't like hanging out with each other. We just want to hang out with all the gay men, you know.
I always think of, you know, that scene in the film Anchorman when they all, like, all the different news teams come in. And sometimes when it's like, when you have like a big group of gay friends and then there's another woman and you're like squaring up.
So
interesting.
Who have you got with you? Okay. Yeah. Oh no, I hang out with him sometimes too. Yeah, you know.
And actually you've got so much in common, which you always realise after that first initial 5 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, so I don't know, as you said, there isn't a positive word for it. And you know, there's also, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like, I think maybe it partially because we've always sat on the side, you know, and we've never been seen as necessarily that key to the community, but then we have been.
I guess it's interesting as well, like, who is giving a group of people a label?
Yes.
You know, is it being placed on you?
Yes.
And I think part of what we've just touched on is there's not necessarily that much community, because if you're used to being like the one woman or one or two, then you see your commonality as like with your male friends or collaborators rather than like this is a group of women.
Yes.
But I think the other thing that's really like the process of reclaiming is so interesting. Like I think if you look at generations of people, so like, you know, you defined yourself as queer. And I think there are a lot of kind of older people who are like, that word to me is a slur and I find it really difficult. But then a lot of younger people, it feels kind of fitting and it just means like I'm not straight and, you know, this is one community. And I just, it's so, and even like, I don't know, like I've noticed definitely on social media, because I follow a lot of American people, so many American gay men use the word fag.
Right, yeah.
And that feels like it's become this like super mainstream thing, but it makes me like twitch every time I see it.
Which is like, but that, I think that's so integral with all those reclaimed words, you know, that it's become a flashpoint word that's been thrown at you or been thrown at someone so many times that you know, the need to take the power away from it is really very necessary. But yeah, you know, but I can understand why someone who grew up probably having the word queer thrown at them would find that really intense. But then it's because generation before me reclaimed the word, you know, that it's okay for me to use it as an identity now, you know, so, you know, it all kind of comes around.
Yeah. Is there a word or a term you would use, or would you not bother? Like, what do you think, there is like a positive one, or is it just a case of we're on a continuum, we're going to get there with fag hag and in 10 years time we'll all be...
I don't know. It's funny because, and I think this is the changing nature of the community in itself, is that I probably more predominantly hung out in groups of gay men as the only woman years ago, whereas now it seems so much more mixed, you know, and so it doesn't feel like... it's not like, oh, there's me. Okay, there's still actually a lot of times there's me and a lot of gay men. But like, but it doesn't, it sometimes I'll stop myself and be like, oh, yeah, actually, oh, here I am again. Yeah, okay. But that is happening less and less for me. So it's not necessarily something that I kind of find myself needing to have as an identity. But I don't know.
I feel like there's more and more people wanting things to be a lot more mixed. There's some people reacting against that.
Yes.
But generally, like, if you're in a group of people, like, you know, the activism I do for the Vauxhall Tavern, it's very much like, okay, like, have we got people of colour in the room?
Yeah.
And have we got trans people in the room?
Absolutely.
And everyone seems to be very, like, really wanting to push that forward.
Yes.
So, yeah, you're right. Maybe it'll just all become irrelevant. And maybe that's why queer is being used more and more.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe we'll find it... less and less that, you know, we need to be the only woman with a whole bunch of gay men. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and finally, something I ask everyone would be to nominate another Dorothy who I should speak to.
Well, I would definitely nominate, I'd love to hear Princess Julia on a podcast. I think she would be amazing. I mean, I love hearing her talk generally about anything, you know, but she came up through like the 70s punk scene and then the 80s new romantic scene. So she was friends with everyone like Boy George, Marilyn, Steve Strange, all of them. And then since gone on, become, you know, this incredible kind of fashion icon who still is loved by everyone in the queer community in East London. And I think she'd probably, has probably borne witness to a lot of the changes that we're talking about. So the way the scene has changed and everything, including like the way the boundaries have changed, the way the community has been affected over the years by different things, including the AIDS crisis, you know. So it would be, I think it'd be fascinating to hear her perspective on this, you know, definitely.
Fanny was such a joy to talk to. I love her attitude, and she really made me consider some preconceptions I had about gender boundaries in performance and in the scene in general. Next week, you'll hear from Professor Chloe Orkin. A Londoner by way of South Africa, she is the chair of the British HIV Association. The story of how Professor Orkin came to work in HIV medicine and how it shaped her life is something I haven't stopped thinking about since I spoke to her. See you next week.